Okay, is everybody back?
Yep.
We're back. We've agreed.
Oh, good. All right. So we're on go for now. And the only thing that I want to remind you of is if at some point something's going on where you are like in my case, the lawnmower always shows up in the middle of these calls, or a construction person who's banging on nails or something, if you'll press *6 to mute your phone, then the rest of us won't hear the distraction. But it sounds like we've got a small enough group today that that's not going to be a problem, and hopefully my lawnmower guy won't come by at the wrong time. So we always start these calls with whether anybody has any announcements for everybody else about things that might be of interest to the rest of the group that are coming up in the next week. And there are a couple of webinars coming up that I wanted to know if you folks might be interested in. One of them is a webinar for small organizations that need to raise big money. And it's being sponsored by all the state affiliates for the North American Association for Environmental Education. And the other one is a series of webinars for the National Science Foundation's proposal deadline for their K-12 programs. And that deadline for proposals is December 7th, but in preparation in the month of September, NSF is sponsoring a number of webinars to familiarize people with the proposal requirements and the guidelines and to answer questions. So if either of those are interest to you folks, let me know now, and I'll send out details
Both of those are definitely of interest to us at the Alliance.
Okay. Why don't I send out both of the details then, because they have URLs attached to them, and you know you need to know both the dates and how to register and connect for them.
Okay, great.
Stephanie, remind me of your organization.
It's the Polar Learning and Responding Climate Change Education Partnership.
And are you affiliated with a government organization or an independent?
No, so we're funded by the National Science Foundation. We're one of six climate change education partnerships that were funded for.
Oh, you're with partnerships. Okay,
right.
Great.
Right.
And where are you located?
We're based out of the Columbia Climate Center. But we have partners, you know, in Alaska, New Hampshire, you know, California.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, those partnerships have been doing some wonderful work. The other thing that I wanted to let you know is, especially with you, Scott, and your colleagues, I don't know how familiar you are with the North American Association for Environmental Education, but that national, in fact, international conference is being held in San Diego this year. It's October 15th to 18th, and there's always a two-day research symposium right before the conference, and so this year that's October 14th and 15th in San Diego. And the reason why that's relevant right now is that early bird registration for that is closing on August 31st. So to get the discount for registrations, you need to register early. And there's also an option for volunteering and getting a one day's worth of your registration for free if you volunteer to work at the conference. So that's another deadline that's coming up. So do any of the rest of you have any announcements that might be of interest to other people?
I can't think of anything that we have that is of general interest right now. I mean, if something occurs to me, I apologize. I'll bring it up if we have the opportunity. We are preparing for the Green Apple Day of Service. That's something that I'm sure everyone else is well aware of. But we're in the process of identifying what projects at our schools or outside of them we can contribute to. So that's an upcoming deadline.
Yeah, and we also, this is Kavitha also with the Alliance. We have a new partnership with New Jersey Natural Gas and the Sustainable Jersey for Schools certification. And we are looking for and accepting applications for that program through the next, I think, to the 28th of August. So if anyone knows the schools that are interested in participating in the Power to the Schools program, please feel free to spread the word. And I can send a link out to that.
Yeah, I was going to suggest you put that on the Climate Literacy Network listserv, because that's where you might get the identification of some schools that would be relevant to that. Great.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Stephanie, given your large project, why don't you talk a little bit about where your project is and where you're headed this year?
Great. So we've been working on, just as a reminder, we are working, it's called the Polar Learning and Responding Climate Change Education Partnership. And it is we're developing novel educational resources to engage adults, but also, teachers. And so through the teachers, we also reach down sort of into the middle school range. And we've developed a number of resources, many of which we've talked about on this call before. So, for example, Future Coast, which ran a year ago this past spring, was a voicemails from the future sort of climate, people developing their own sort of climate scenarios by the little the voicemail stories that they leave. So that ran, and we're continuing to run some facilitated events. It's a great exercise for schools, for classes, by the way. It's been run really successfully at a couple places. Columbia, where were the other ones? University of Oregon, and they're finding it to be really a great educational tool. So that's one of the things that has come out. Another one is that we're just about ready to launch is a card game called EcoChain's Arctic Crisis. And it is a 2-4 player card game of strategy and survival about the changing Arctic. And so that's going to be a terrific resource for schools, but also for just anyone to play. And we did some really neat research on it, where we did a controlled study, and people were randomly assigned to either a control where they read an article, kind of a magazine style article that had very similar content to what was in the card game, and they also played the card game. And what we found was that the people who played the card game really retained, when we did a 4-week follow-up, the learning findings were similar immediately after the interventions, but 4 weeks in the follow-up, the people who played the card game retained much more knowledge about the diversity of the food web, whereas the ones who read the article basically had their prior knowledge sort of reinforced. So that's very cool, and we're presenting those results at AGU in December. We also have a game. Oh, go ahead. Is there a question?
I was just going to ask, what age range do you think? Was it called Eco Change Arctic Climate? I didn't quite catch the title.
Eco Change Arctic Crisis. Basically middle school on up. Honestly, when we were playing it, we were targeting older people, but young people pick it up so quickly that when we've been doing demonstrations, there's like some 7-year-olds that refuse to leave when we're demonstrating it.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, the parents think, come on, we have to go. And this has happened, like 5 times or more, where the kids just won't leave.
Great.
That's one. There's another one that I think for this, we talked about this a long time ago. It's called Arctic Smartic. It's Strategic Management of Resources in Times of Change. And that's posted, the complete set of resources is posted on the CAML website. You can just download it if you just Google Arctic Smartic, it comes up immediately. And that one we've used with thousands of people in different settings, ranging all the way from a 10th grade class up through to people on a tourist cruise and sort of retirees, and it's a role-playing game, and people really, you know, get into it. It's been really successful. You know, very, people learn about the Arctic system and the complexity, but they also come away feeling kind of empowered and with kind of tools for how to think about the changing Arctic. That's another one. We're launching the Polar Explorer, an app that allows you to explore the complexities, especially of sea level rise. People think of it as a bathtub model that, you know, you put ice, you put water in, and it rises everywhere and stuff. And it turns out that, you know, the real story is more complex than that. But it, what happens with this app is it's a guided set of questions. So people, you know, all these database servers, people tend to, if you're not a kind of geek, you know, people go to it and they look at it once and they say, oh, that's kind of interesting. But in this case, what we've done is we've developed a whole bunch of questions that somebody might have. And then they can click on it, and they can explore the data that gives them, you know, the answers or a way to think about it. And this was just run at the climate modeling workshop that was run at the beginning of the month. Who hosted that again, Jessica?
It was hosted by NOAA. It was the Climate Modeling and Simulation Workshop.
We were at that workshop, and I had the opportunity to use the app, and it was fantastic.
Okay, did it work for you?
It did, yeah, it was great. And I think we also had some feedback that hopefully
we'll get you off. Right. So we're working, we're just about ready to launch that one in September. I've been talking for a while. So that's just a whole bunch of the stuff that we've been working on and that, that you know, is either ready or just about ready to launch. We've been rolling things out, and by November or so, everything that we've been developing ourselves will be rolled out. In the meantime, what we've been doing, and that's why I'm glad that you gave me the opportunity to talk about this, is we're really looking for resources that are along these lines, you know, that are fun, interesting, novel, and engaging, and that we can also point people to, because we want to be kind of a hub where we have the things that we've developed, but also we're collecting what other people have done. And we're in all these venues now where we can kind of showcase things. So if people have things along these lines that they're either have developed already or they're planning on developing, we'd be happy to talk with you about it. And we'll be running, we ran a games workshop at AGU last year, and we'll be running one again this coming fall. And that worked out really well. And we're always in that one. We don't just we'd be happy to showcase some things that other people have, or work with you to showcase your own work, too.
Neat. I need to ask you, Stephanie, whether you're scheduled for a Clean Network presentation on this call at some point in the next few months?
Yeah, so we've been doing them periodically. So we did one on Future Coast, as I mentioned, and, of course, on the partnership as a whole. And I think it would be really good. We've got definitely we should do one on EcoChains because I think that's very cool. But also we're developing a social networking app called Greenify that I think this group, you know, is terrific. Helpful to us with thinking through Future Coast. We did a pre-launch call, and I think with Greenify that would be a really great thing to enlist your help with as well.
Because we're in the process of scheduling the sessions for the 2015-16 school year, and I know Tamara has been looking for additional presenters. So you may want to email Tamara directly with, you know, possibilities. The other thing that I was wondering is whether you're planning on marketing any of these things.
Yeah, so the card game, we are. We'll be running some programs. What we've done is we've printed the first set of 1,000, in order to kind of test the waters, so to speak, and so, you know, find out, you know, what the glitches are and all that kind of thing, and then from there we plan to definitely have it for sale.
And the first set of 1,000, are you marketing those online or just at conferences or what?
We're still working out exactly how we're handling it. What we're doing right now is we've been demonstrating this at a number of different venues, and they've all offered to be kind of initial pilot programs, you know, for us. And so we're going through and meeting all of those demands first, or, you know, opportunities first.
So it's more internal use right now. The reason why I'm asking this question is that I'm sure this is the purpose of your NSF grant, is that they seem to be very, you know, market worthy, and I'm thinking of the holiday season, and thinking, boy, it would really be neat if for the holidays. I mean, I'm sure just on the Clean Network alone, you could sell hundreds and thousands of them as we each buy up for our, you know, various family members and friends.
Yeah. Thanks for the offer. I mean, definitely we were, with the timing, we're very excited that we have this first batch before the school season starts. And, you know, the Arctic sea ice minimum is a big, you know, kind of anniversary point for us, which is middle of September. So I think
right.
we were wanting to. So I think we have the initial set ready to meet that, and then what we can do is based on that in the holiday season as well. You're right. Thank you.
Cool.
And just a quick question, Stephanie. Those of us here at the Alliance who run education programs, would it be allowable and appropriate for us to introduce our students if we purchase some of those decks from here? Could we use that within our programs?
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we're developing an educational guide. So we're, you know, we in the design, we linked to the Next Generation Science Standards. So we have some really, like, some things are really hard to address in there, like what are the impacts of climate change? You know, how can you experiment with that, right? But with the card game, you actually can. To, you know, simulate that really well. So I think it will be really useful for those venues.
Cool.
Great, because we currently don't really have a climate change benchmark within our program. Like one of the sort of chapters of our roadmap that dedicated to climate change, but it's something we've been thinking about introducing. And your card game sounds like the perfect interactive tool to make it something that kids can engage in and remember.
Yeah. We'll definitely follow up. Do you have my email?
What would be easiest, Stephanie, is if you're going to be sending out a notice to the Clean Network about other learning resources and to let you know if they have any, then Scott and company could get your email from that.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we'll follow up. That's a great idea.
Good.
Great.
Cool. Scott, do you want to tell us a little bit more about what you folks have been doing with your new programming?
Well, yeah. First of all, I'm not sure how familiar you guys are with our just general education program, so I can kind of give you a brief summary of how our traditional program works, and then talk about some of the new iterations of the program.
Good.
Okay. So the PowerSave program is, we've been doing this for about almost 20 years now. Across the country, right now we have a lot of our longest served utility clients in California, but we're a national program. And really it's about year-long, student-driven, full school engagement and education around efficiency. So I'll try to condense this into a really high-level overview. But essentially, we work with school districts, and at every school within that district, we take a small group of adult team members, so usually two teachers and a custodian, and we train them in our roadmap guide, which is a series of 12 benchmarks. It goes from everything to understanding the basic concepts of energy to using energy diagnostic tools to conduct audits of classrooms and other school spaces, and then driving awareness throughout the school of where energy is being wasted and these simple, easy behaviors that can reduce energy waste. And then we also get into, as the year progresses, higher level concepts like understanding energy demand, looking at renewables and the trade-offs between those and other fuel sources, introducing students to green careers and the educational and professional pathways that lead them there. So you get a very kind of in-depth understanding of energy literacy concepts by the end of the year. So to leap back to the start of the year, once those teachers are introduced to this roadmap guide, then they go back to their schools and they draft teams of 10 to 30 students who become the PowerSafe team at their schools. And those students and a dedicated staff member from the local project leader visits those sites biweekly and leads the student through each one of the benchmarks. The benchmarks are comprised of action steps, which are student-led activities that impact the school and include outreach to their peers and teachers and parents and community. And then we also have lesson plans. About five of the benchmarks are lesson plans. And those are correlated to Common Core Next Generation Science Standards. They're STEM-based lesson plans, and they're also provided in both traditional and the flipped video format. So if teachers can't integrate it within their curriculum, they have the option of having their students watch the instructional portion in their free time and then applying the learning, which is always part of the lesson plan, in the classroom or in the school. So students at each one of those benchmarks, there's always an activity that the students have to do that is specific to them. They get to choose what they want to do and imagine the type of activity that they want to do to carry this message throughout the school, to take their learning and apply it more broadly and make it a hands-on learning experience. So we track savings while the students are going through the steps of the benchmark with the help of the local project leader. We're tracking savings relative to the baseline period, the 12 months preceding the intervention. And we report back to them on where they're how they're doing in reducing their energy waste. And our tracking, we have a third-party energy tracker. So it's normalized for weather and for changes in flood load. We work with the custodial and the facility staff to kind of reconcile all the externalities so that you're really getting a snapshot of the difference that the behavior makes. And so we track that over the course of the year, which is very incentivizing to the whole school because the districts agree to return 50% of those savings back to the individual school, which, again, as a kind of, first of all, dollars are a lingua franca. Everybody understands the scale of a dollar, or they won't intuitively understand the importance of a kilowatt hour saved or a pound of carbon dioxide offset. But dollars is something they understand. So it's it's a yardstick for progress, and it also gives them something to strive for because very often there's applications at the school other than either environmental or other that those dollars make those dollars meaningful for the school. For the district, it shows the vote of confidence in the validity of our savings because obviously you never get a check for deferred energy bills, but you do or avoided energy costs, but you do have to write a check for tens or for thousands or tens of thousands of dollars in some cases to these schools to pay them back for the savings they generated. So it's that's an element that really brings the whole district together. And our historical savings is about 5 to 15%. So it's really significant energy savings. So that is kind of an overview of what the PowerSafe Schools program, how it operates. We've had a very busy development season this past year. So some of the new iterations of the program that we are launching in the fall, besides spreading into new geographic areas like New Jersey and Philadelphia and Maine and I forget where all, New York. So part of our spread is our growth is geographic. But for some of our new funders, we've had to create new elements of the program. So a couple of exciting ones, for one of our California funders, we integrated interval data and a more direct facilities, high-level facilities engagement in the program, and we were able to drive a much higher level of savings. So in the first year, the schools are hitting about 15%, which is the high end of our traditional savings, and normally you see that only in the second year of the program. So we're excited about that. We're working with our partners in California, our utility partners, to create a version of our behavior program that could claim savings. So, you know, it would become a resource program as opposed to a workforce education and training program. That's something that a lot of our funders have expressed interest in doing, but that's kind of the holy grail of the behavior programs because no one's been able to get their public utility commissions to allow them to claim the savings. So that's one exciting area that we're developing. We have a new partnership with Inesco, with Siemens, which is exciting because it's one where our program is going to be working in many schools across many districts simultaneously. So that required a new model of the program. And we can't claim savings in that because it's part of an ESCO retrofit operation. You can't really disaggregate the behavior piece from the retrofit efficiencies. So what we've done instead is created a energy literacy competition energy literacy is always a part of our program, obviously, but we've made the part that students are really striving for is to demonstrate mastery of energy literacy and then to impart that to their peers and have their peers take a quiz to test the overall improvement in energy literacy at the school. So that's an exciting new direction for us. Trying to think of new, and then there's also a revolving fund model that we've been working with a number of districts to put in place. We've been developing this for a while too. So it's one in which the savings from the program pay for the cost of the program, still hopefully, according to the pilots we've done, generate savings for the district and include albeit smaller, but still a significant return to the individual schools for their energy reduction. So I think that's a big part of our future. And we're working on a faith-based version of the program. We're working with Interfaith Power and Light to come up with an iteration of the program that's similar to the revolving fund because we would have to have something that is self-perpetuating, but that includes that element of environmental stewardship that kind of resonates with that community and would allow us to reach a really huge part of the educational sector that our utility-funded programs can't reach.
Cool.
It's a few there.
Sounds like you got a lot of irons in the fire.
Yes, we have more irons in the fire almost.
And that's just our K-12 program. Yeah. We do have a higher education arm as well, with
we
have programs that we work with UC. California, and we're looking to also enter the
K-State
college
market. Yeah, so very good point, and thank you. I omitted that, but PowerSafe campus is the other half of our education program.
Great. I don't know whether you saw on the Clean Network listserv the announcement this week that NCSE is doing a big higher ed program. I can't remember the name of it, but it involves it involves direct lobbying at the State House with student groups going from the higher ed institution to the State House to meet with legislators. And it might be interesting to connect actual campus actions with that increased involvement and knowledge of the students in the political change arena.
We were just discussing a kind of similar idea yesterday with some folks from NEIST. And for us, I mean, at the campus level, I think that might be a really good idea. We're sensitive that when we're dealing with K through 12, we've got essentially a captive audience. And so we're like introducing them to the levels of levers of power and how you go about communicating with your congressman. I think that's something we might be able to get into. But we have to be really careful that we don't advocate for you see where I'm going with that. So,
and that's why I think the higher ed focus of NCSE is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with you.
It's more focusing on governance and how policy changes are made at the state level in this case. With a group that's more mature and more appropriate to deal with those policy decision-making kinds of things.
Right.
Do any of your schools ever take their savings, the profit that they get from their savings, and invest it, invest part of it in more energy efficiency kinds of savings?
Some of them do, and you know, we haven't kept a, which we probably should have, we haven't kept a database of how all that money gets spent. Just as you mentioned, it just occurs to me that that would have been a useful thing to start. Can you take a note of that? We will bring that up on the Fireside call, because we really should try to document where the money gets spent. But long story short, those are, I mean, obviously the district has some discretion, in fact, all the discretion in the kind of restrictions they put on it. But typically it's unrestricted funds. So what we ask is that it not just be absorbed into the general fund, but that it be allocated for a specific purpose. But for us, it's, you know, that could be new soccer nets or basketball hoops or, you know, iPads or whatever. It could be whatever educational need the school finds most compelling. And obviously we would love it if they invested it in a some kind of efficiency effort or in the continued funding of the PowerSafe program after our utility-funded period is over. But that said, you know, what we really want it to be is something that is that has authorship of the whole school and that is incentivizing to everyone. So if that were, you know, cotton candy party for, you know, for saving so much energy, if that's the thing that's going to get everybody the most engaged during that year that we work with them, that's, you know, that's up to their discretion.
Right. But and those kinds of decisions are really most appropriately made at the school level, like you've said.
Right. So that said, we also, and we've been trying to make more robust this aspect of our program, we try to leave them with a blueprint. You know, some of our schools continue on for 2 or 3 years in the funded program. And the longer they remain active, you know, the more lasting the impact is, the better their savings are. And but everybody graduates eventually, and we're trying to leave them with all the materials they need to design their own self-sustaining version of the program. And that does require energy tracking and a rededication of some of those savings back into the maintaining the program. So that's something that we're going to increasingly encourage them to do when we leave. But again, it's, you know, it's the schools and the district's decision whether or not to do that.
Good. And when they're in the program for more than 1 year, do they keep increasing their savings?
Yeah, we see.
Behavior changes.
I'm sorry.
From behavior changes.
Yeah, from behavior. It's all behavior driven. So, for instance, if they do a lighting retrofit, that's one of the things we'll do an adjustment for. So we don't want the savings from external factors to go towards to be counted as program savings, because it's just to be honest, it kills their motivation. If it's coming too easy, there's no reason to work for it.
Right.
So we really want it to be a snapshot of behavior-driven energy savings. But we do see energy savings increases in the second year, so it gets up to 20 and even 30% by the end of the second year. Now, that said, that is a beautiful number, but I have to be honest that the schools that go on to be second and third year schools are the schools that are most successful. So you're dealing with, it's not just like any school that stays in the program is going to see savings like that. It's that we're taking the best schools to maintain their programs. So if we had, which I would love to have, all schools participate for 2 years, what I would expect you'd see is an increase in savings rate to about 10 to 20% on average, particularly as we are able to integrate more interval data, because that's been a real game changer. I mean, it just allows you to identify where your waste is happening so much more easily than when you're dealing with just monthly aggregated data where you're just, you know, there's a problem, but it takes an awful lot of sleuthing to figure out where it is.
Sure. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, this sounds really incredible. It sounds totally incredible. And because if anything, you know, schools being such a large portion of both local and state budgets, anything that can save them money is just a godsend to education, in addition to the educational message that your program specifically carries. I missed the beginning. Where are you currently working? I heard where you said you were expanding to. Where are you working currently?
Well, We have programs in California, so we have two utility partners in Southern California and two utility partners in Northern California. And now we work in Tennessee. We've got three programs going in Tennessee, and some that are working directly with school districts, so they're district funded, and as well as utility programs. And then you heard we've got a new program in Philadelphia. We've got a project with Siemens in New York and Maine, and then hopefully we'll have a program that we'll be launching in the school district in Philadelphia, which we're really excited about. That's another model. I don't want to go too much into detail on that one because we're still developing the proposal, so I would probably get lost in the weeds very quickly and bore you all. But we've got an exciting program that's going to allow us to use mentorship between high schools and elementaries to reach many more schools at a lower average cost than what we've done in the past. So we're always looking to figure out scalable versions of the program that can generate savings, but again, be lower cost so that more schools can take part.
Yeah, nice.
That's great. Now, if you ever want to come into Massachusetts, I have connections in the Boston metro area, Metro West, with programs that are very active in other aspects of sort of greening schools, like recycling and so on and so forth. And there are a couple of amazing success stories locally. And I would imagine that if you came in with a program, these schools would jump on board in a minute because they've already had demonstrated success with other programs.
Oh, that's a neat linkage. Yeah.
Yeah, and yes, please, we would love to work in Massachusetts. So let's follow
up. It sounds like your first step for all these, Scott, is finding a utility to be a sponsor. Is that correct?
Yeah, in the traditional model, I mean, most of our programs have been utility funded. So we do have, as we created these lower cost versions of the program, we have gotten school districts to fund it directly. But a lot of the school districts that have funded it have done that after they've experienced the utility funded version of the program. Because there's no barrier to saying yes to the utility version. And then once they see for themselves the value, then they want to maintain it. We do have the Siemens.
Give us an order of magnitude. About how much does it cost for a district to get engaged?
It depends on the iteration of the program. I would say that, for instance, when we do the kind of the full bore traditional program for a high school, it costs, and I'm like, don't quote me, this is ballpark, but it's about $10,000 per school. But then, the average utility bill, electrical bill at a high school is about, let's say around $300,000.
Yeah.
So if they save 10% of that, the program clearly offsets the cost. And then for the elementary schools, in the older version of the program, we put the same kind of financial resources into every school in the program. But what we're trying to do now is develop new models where we can lower the cost of the program for the elementaries so that they may only cost about, let's say, $6,000 in the first year and less than that in the subsequent years. I mean, I'm not talking two round numbers here. These are, I'm giving you pretty close to the numbers that we budgeted for the programs for which we've developed these models. And that way, elementaries have much smaller utility bills. And we've figured out kind of lower resource ways of getting the educational benefits to the students while pulling back a little on the energy savings rigor at the elementary level because the real dollars to be saved and to cover the cost of the program are there in the high school. So it's kind of a balancing act of resources. But by doing that, we're able to drop the average cost per district substantially below the $10,000 per school ballpark that we used to operate in, so that we can get it down to, I think for the latest proposal we're working on with Philly, it winds up being about $4,500 per school to work with the district. And again, if you quote that number to a school directly, they'll be like, wow, that's an expensive program. But you have to take into account the energy tracking, the real energy savings that they generate And so the fact that it winds up being a cash flow positive program for them.
And some districts pay the utility bills at the district level so that the school level never sees them. So you have to deal with that disparity, too, in terms of to whom does utility bill make sense as a driver.
Yeah, absolutely. And typically that is you know, the district is the one paying all the bills. And so
yeah.
The person that you have to present the business proposition to is the CBO or the Assistant Superintendent of Business Services. And, I mean, it's funny because I got into this for very student-centered and idealistic reasons, but I've become increasingly, you know, business-oriented the longer I work in it, because to me, when it is financially sustainable, then it is truly sustainable. And if we want this program with the educational and environmental benefits to outlast the funded period from the utilities, then we need to create a compelling business case to the district so that they will have no reason to say no and every reason to say yes to it. And that, you know, and that requires a business case. And so
yep.
That is what we've been kind of developing over the last really 2 or 3 years. We've had our focus on that. So now we're finally getting to put into practice these program models, which is exciting.
Interesting. Yeah. When you get your new business models set up and are ready to talk about it to a larger group, you might also want to get in touch with Tamara and explain to her the kinds of things that you might lead on one of these weekly calls so that others can learn about. Because I think your program is not only in and of itself of interest, but the way that you've developed the business model behind it to sustain it and to replicate it across the country, I think would be interesting to a number of programs.
We would love to share that. I mean, this is definitely not something that we're trying to keep to ourselves. So the more people we can share this kind of, and there's a lot of other people, by the way, as we've talked to potential funders and partners, people in Wisconsin, and they just struck me because they were doing something very similar to this. And so we were talking with somebody just yesterday about this who was also, the two elements are getting savings recognized as a resource and setting up
yep.
revolving funds in the K-12 market. Those are two areas where I think a lot of people are interested in this.
Cool.
Yeah, we were talking
Did your program start down in San Diego with this? Because I know some folks in San Diego who worked with the utility down there to start something like this maybe 5 years or 10 years ago.
We have not had a contract down in San Diego for the school side. We do have our PowerSafe Campus program down there. And, the SDG&E funds our campus program. But we would love to work in San Diego. And in fact, we've had a number of really talented people that graduated from our program and happened to move to San Diego. And they're like, oh, get a San Diego program going so that we can work for you again. But we haven't done that yet. And we're in the middle of the California IOUs are putting out new RFPs for their big programs, including ours. And so we've been in California kind of getting ready for that. That's a big seismic event for us. But once that is behind us, expanding the school's program into San Diego territory is definitely a development priority.
Okay, good. Well, thanks, Scott. Anybody else have any thoughts or ideas or things that you'd like to share with the group? I know there's some new people on the call. Okay, well, I think it's been a very interesting call today, and I hope all of you will call back, and please send to all of us the things that we've talked about today so that we can find the links and learn more about your programs online. And I hope you'll all be on next week as we start our school year series of these calls. So thanks again for participating.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Good talk with you, Stephanie.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.